This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
Dogs and cats, like their owners, are living longer than ever. That's the good news. Sadly, with that longevity, both can suffer with dementia issues. The signs can vary tremendously. You might be tempted to believe that your pet has become frustratingly stubborn, lazy, grumpy, or just downright daft. Is it dementia, a behavioral tic, or does it have some underlying medical explanation? If it is dementia, are there any effective treatments? Is there anything you can do to prevent it, or at least slow down the process? I'm so honored to again have as my guest award-winning, board-certified veterinary behaviorist, Dr. Gary Landsberg. He operates a behavior referral practice, North Toronto Veterinary Behavior Specialty Clinic in Canada, and is the Vice President of Veterinary Affairs at Kangkog Technologies. We'll be right back after this short break.
Not pumped about cleaning the litter box? Try World's Best Cat Litter Zero Mess, the litter that gives you 2 times better clumping and more odor control with less litter. That's right. You scoop once and you're done. No chiseling, no scraping, no crumbling, no problem. Looking for fast and easy litter box cleanup? Zero Mess. Try it. You're welcome in advance. Save $2 on World's Best Cat Litter. Visit www.saveonworldsbest.com.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to the Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Dr. Landsberg, thank you so much. Before we got on air, we're both talking about every once in a while we forget a word, we forget that favorite actor, and it's like, wow, am I getting dementia already, or am I just occupied? That's it, I'm preoccupied with something. So thank you. This is a topic that I think is very timely for so many of us.
It is. I like to think that maybe sometimes I'm getting old enough that my brain is full and I just don't have room for anything more. But unfortunately, things do happen with age, both health-wise and behavior-wise. And fortunately, with early recognition, early diagnosis, there are things we can do to help stem the decline, maybe even more in pets than can be done in people, because the condition tends to be milder, maybe identified a little earlier, and if identified a little earlier, and maybe some therapeutics that can hold things in check considering the lifespan of pets for a few extra years.
Dr. Landsberg, I was doing some research before going on air with you, and I found some really disturbing facts that according to the Alzheimer's Association, since the year 2000 in the U.S., the number of deaths due to heart disease has decreased by 14%, while the number of deaths due to Alzheimer's disease in people has increased by 89%. Is dementia a problem in pets that's rising as dramatically as with their owners?
Probably, and I don't have that human data, but one of the things that comes to mind is that many of these other conditions with good health care, preventive care, nutrition, diagnostics, are able to be controlled better and better, and there is nothing really controllable for any length of time, certainly no treatment for Alzheimer's. So looking at in that analogy with pets, the longer that pets live, and they are living longer, despite, quote unquote, and I'm saying this in a sarcastic way, despite the vaccines we give them and the nutrition that we're giving them and these therapeutic diets that we're giving them, which truly are, of course, keeping them healthy if we use the right amounts and the right types, they're living longer lives. And part of that, too, is the identification of other disease processes like heart disease or even certain cancers that we now can treat, and the pets live longer. And the biggest risk factor for cognitive dysfunction is age, is increasing age.
Is that catch 22? Live long and you too will not remember that you're living long.
Or live long enough and something's going to get there. And unfortunately, or fortunately, as pets get older, all the other diseases may be prevented or controlled, or many of the others, and you're left with having to deal with age-related declines related to brain dysfunction, cognitive dysfunction.
But I know you're working on that. We'll talk about things that you can do. So I keep mentioning Alzheimer's in people. Do pets truly get Alzheimer's, or what's the cross-section of dementia issues that pets can get?
Well, first, there are similarities and, in fact, studies that have identified the cognitive dysfunction, which is what we're calling it, in dogs and pretty much in cats as well, to be similar to the early stages of human Alzheimer's, both in the types of clinical signs, including declines in learning and memory, even though you might not see them in your pet, they have been identified in laboratory studies, and in the changes that occur in the brain with neuron loss and increased beta amyloid accumulation. So many similarities between the two. And the identification is not by some diagnostic test, it's by clinical signs. And those clinical signs are related to decline in cognitive function.
So it really is a disease of exclusion. So it's not this, this, or this. So we're going to call it a cognitive dysfunction because there's no other title for me to give it. Is that correct?
Exactly. And when I say there's no diagnostic test, just as you alluded to, there are diagnostic tests once you identify the signs, and we'll talk about the signs in a moment, but once you identify the signs to rule out what other medical conditions might cause those signs. For instance, if a pet is house soiling, it could be urinary tract disease or kidney disease or diabetes or Cushing's disease. There's just so many differentials that the first part is to identify the signs. The second part is to rule out the medical problems that might cause those signs. And if all of the other medical conditions are ruled out, then cognitive dysfunction is generally a diagnosis of exclusion. And don't forget that your senior pet, as in a senior person, can have multiple conditions. So you can have arthritis and cognitive dysfunction, or kidney problems and cognitive dysfunction. So there can be some challenge to the veterinarian to determine exactly what's causing the signs. But first, let's identify the signs and then do our medical workups. Twice a year checkups and look for those signs and any health problems with senior pets.
Okay, so what are some of these signs? I remember when I first was exposed to canine cognitive dysfunction syndrome that they gave it the mnemonic of DIS. So D-I-S-H, so they would be disoriented and sometimes they didn't interact with the family as much. Go through some of these different signs for me. That would be great.
Yeah, DIS is a very good starting point because it's not only an acronym for four of the clinical signs, but also in one of the more recent papers out of Slovakia, some researchers in the field have looked at those four signs as being the ones that they're using for a diagnostic profile. In other words, a validated questionnaire using those signs. So they include disorientation, and every one of these, I'm giving the categories, but there's a group of questions your veterinarian would ask or you would ask yourself about your pet. So the questions under the category of disorientation might be going to the hinge side of a door instead of the expected side, the proper side of a door. It might be staring off into space or picking up food and dropping it and not going back and retrieving it, getting lost in the backyard or in portions of the house. There might be signs of social interaction changes. That's the I for interactions. And this can be in two directions. It can be a pet who's less interested in interacting with other pets or with family members, or it can be a pet who is hyper-attached, who doesn't want to leave your side, who is very upset when it's separated from you. Third category would be sleep cycles. changes, and that's the S. And of course, the most common one there would be waking at night, not sleeping through the night, although some pets sleep more during the day or sounder sleeps, some with restless sleeps. And the H is for house soiling, which is somewhat of a broader category in that, of course, with Alzheimer's and with dementia type problems, there is a decline in learning and a decline in memory. And since we don't have a lot of behaviors in our pets, maybe they know their name or a few commands, or they're working dogs that have learned a few things, the one learned behavior that may start to be noticed, although fairly advanced when you notice it, is house soiling, because the pet used to go to the correct area and now it's going to areas that it shouldn't go. Those are some of the validated categories. But when we're screening pets, there are two more that I like to throw in there. One is changes in activity, which now makes your DISH category DISH-ah, because with more advanced cognitive dysfunction, there are repetitive and aimless activities, circling type behaviors. And early on in the condition, there may actually be a decline in activity. And then the final one, which may be part of the other categories, but we've made it separate in a screening questionnaire, one that we say is more sensitive to picking up signs, would be anxiety changes. Pets who are starting to get more fearful or anxious, pets who have new fears and phobias. And one recent study found that, in fact, in non-demented older pets, the frequency was about 4% of the prevalence, about 4% of anxiety. But in cognitive dysfunction pets, that approached 50%. So there probably are six categories which could have medical causes, as we said. And those six categories are, you know, asked to you each year by your veterinarian, or you volunteer answers to any changes in these categories to your veterinarian. And if they're there, we can A, work up and exclude medical problems, and B, start talking about therapeutics for either the medical problem or cognitive dysfunction or both.
Dr. Landsberg, listening to you go through the DISHA, all these various signs that you can see, it's like, wow, these are all great questions to ask. And I can imagine that so many of my clients' mature pets are undergoing or showing some of these signs, but I know they're not asking me or telling me that these signs are present. And I know that many times I'm so concerned with, gee, is it drinking more water? Does it have any lameness issues? Really focusing on these medical aspects. I'm sure that myself as a veterinarian and many of my colleagues are not asking the appropriate questions. So it really seems as though this has to be an underreported problem. What's percentage, and what do you think can be done to improve? I know I have to ask, that's number one, but what age do people start seeing this in their pets?
Well, to borrow a phrase and change it a bit, this is the do ask, do tell scenario, where veterinarians need to ask, but owners need to tell us. It's really important to know that almost every study that's recently looked at cognitive dysfunction and older studies have found that the prevalence is quite, quite high. In fact, one of the recent Slovakian studies found that in dogs over 13, it might approach 100%. Certainly, lower estimates of validated estimates of cognitive dysfunction. The lowest one I've seen is 14%, and that's dogs from 8 years of age and older. So that certainly the older they get, the more the prevalence. Yet with mild signs, they're hardly ever diagnosed unless the veterinarian asks. Most people don't report them. And in one study where they used a validated cognitive questionnaire on the internet, they found that 14% of older dogs, that's the one I was mentioning, had signs of cognitive dysfunction, but only 1.9% of dogs had been diagnosed. So 85-87% of them were being missed. And that's because we as veterinarians need to ask about signs, owners need to tell us about signs. And one last thing in this category, I mentioned checkups perhaps every 6 months for dogs that are older, cats that are older. And that's because in another one of the studies, they found that of the pets that had no cognitive signs 6 months earlier, as many as 50% had some signs 6 months later. And 1 year later, as many as 70% had at least one sign. So with that in mind, and since lab tests can change and physical health can change, it's really important to, number one, see your veterinarian twice a year for checkups and lab tests, and number two, to go through a behavioral questionnaire each time and find out if there are any changes.
as a veterinarian, hearing you say that, boy, this is starting as early as 8 years of age, I know myself, I'll tell my clients, you know, gee, doc, do we need to do blood work this year? I said, okay, 7 years of age is when I typically start saying, yes, we really need to get a baseline on our cats and dogs, and our giant breeds of dogs were recommended even earlier. But if I'm thinking that seven is about just that onset of maturity, the older age dog or cat, now you're saying at 8 years of age, they're already showing signs of dementia. When should we start taking these baselines?
Probably between 6 and 8 years of age. Oh, baselines certainly by six, but starting to screen by 6 to 8 years of age on a regular basis. I mean, there have been laboratory studies showing that, or laboratory test studies showing pets with no signs can even have bacteria in their urine and early bladder infections. They can start to get rises in their alkaline phosphatase, which could be an indication of Cushing's or liver-type problems, as early as these ages as well. So you want your screening tests certainly before 6 years of age, or when they're young animals, you do a baseline screening, and then annual screening up until then, and I would say between 6 and 8, starting with your twice-a-year screening. Medical, laboratory tests, physical exams. Remember, the veterinarian will look in your animal's eyes and listen to their heart and feel their lymph nodes and do those rectal exams, especially if you have a male dog. And you're not going there as a pet owner, but you do have a responsibility to tell us if there are signs developing, because we don't know as veterinarians about those. And then we can work them up and perhaps use therapeutics for slowing the decline or improving cognitive signs.
With veterinarians sometimes dropping the ball on questions of dementia issues, what's going on cognitively for their cat and dog patients, is there some site that a pet owner can go to that says, oh, these are the things that I should be aware of? Yes, you mentioned DSHA, and some of us just, oh, now what was that D? What did it stand for again? Is there some place they can go print this off, and then periodically, I love for my clients to keep a pet health diary so they can go through and they can make notations of things that they're seeing. And when they come in to see me, bring along that notebook. So you get so involved in everything else. Oh, doc, I forgot to tell you about X. Is there such a site? Are there such handouts?
There are, and they're growing and changing. So anything I might mention now, we're working on doing better. The okay. company is me as an individual. So for example, I've always had a screening questionnaire in my veterinary behavior book. It's called Behavior Problems of the Dog and Cat. That's quite an extensive screening questionnaire, so that even if I refer to the term sensitivity, looking at, well, maybe not all these signs are cognitive, but let's at first find the behavioral signs, and then we can work on whether they're due to cognitive decline or not. And a more specific questionnaire, one that says, well, these questions are indicative of cognitive dysfunction, maybe that's not the best thing for screening. That's for diagnostic purposes. Certainly, the product, if we're going to mention some products, there's one called Selegiline, which is a drug that's a Zoetis product. And that one, they have a site called cdsindogs.com. But again, these change over time. There are some new therapeutics and new diets that are on the market, and those companies have on their websites or as part of their material questionnaires or at least checklists for DSHA signs. And we're actually working on one now of going through we just did a clinical trial, which we can talk about, that used a therapeutic diet for the treatment of cognitive dysfunction. But we also used a questionnaire for that trial. And now that we have all the data from that questionnaire with the six signs, the disorientation, social interaction, sleep, house soiling, activity, and anxiety, we're also trying to validate which questions were the most important, the most critical to that, and we should have that published as a study shortly. So keep looking for new questionnaires, but just asking the question, using the existing questionnaires, that's really what's important.
Listening right now and talking to Dr. Gary Landsberg, board-certified veterinary behaviorist, talking about things that's going to happen to us and to our pets if we get old enough, having changes in cognition. So remember to stay tuned. We'll be back right after this short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
They wake me up every morning. Their tails are always wagging. They're just running constantly and chasing, you know, shadows and sticks. Their coats are much better. They're very happy dogs. If you want the dog to be healthy, you got to feed it something healthy.
DINOVITE.com.
I have three dogs, golden retrievers, and I make their own food, ground beef, white rice, eggs, including the shells, and the Dynavite supplement, and then the Lick-O-Chops. It takes a few minutes every week. Before the Dynavite, they were overweight. They slept all the time, so now they jump all over me when I'm putting it in their bowls. They're crazy about this food, and their vet said that it's so much healthier for them. Go check out Rescue Dogs. They're just waiting to be loved. Get them started on this Dynavite diet, the health food for animals, and you'll see amazing results.
859-428-1000.
859-428-1000.
DINOVITE.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to the Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Dr. Landsberg, talking about all these various signs and starting as early as 8 years of age to see some of these signs, are there any breed or sex predilections for seeing these things?
There probably aren't. I say that because what's looked at in the literature every time a study, a prevalence study for cognitive dysfunction is done, they'll find something different. So it's just the population of animals they've looked at. There were some studies that may have found some increase in neutered pets, but that hasn't been found on a more recent study. There were really no differences, not a lot of differences between males and females. People looked at size differences and went, well, really, it's an age thing. The older they get, the more likely they are to see signs. That prevalence, as I said, is maybe 65, 70% or higher in dogs 13 and older. It might only be 5%. It's still 5% in dogs that might be 8 or older, or the younger age group, 8 to 10. So it's age that's the biggest one. But interestingly enough, one study, again, I mentioned this group in Slovakia, which is doing a fair amount of studies in this field. They did risk factors, just like you asked about, and they found that one of the biggest risk factors, the one they could identify, was diet, was nutrition. And they found in their nutrition studies, and this wasn't a special diet for cognitive dysfunction, that might help even more. This was just looking at pets that had been fed therapeutic diets, any diet that was meant for the health or lifespan of their veterinarian, age-related diets, health-related diets, so a therapeutic diet that a veterinarian had dispensed, and compared that to common commercial diets, and because it was Slovakia, perhaps, or the population they were looking at, dogs that have been fed just leftovers, kitchen waste. And they found there was almost three times less cognitive dysfunction in the pets that have been fed a good therapeutic diet. So diet may be a factor, and then there are diets that have been specifically looked at for cognitive dysfunction that might help even more.
That is exciting to know that we can really make a difference for our pets. And I start wondering, boy, I wonder if it makes a difference to what I'm eating. So I was going to say this for the end, but since you brought this up right now, is there translational work between what we're learning and our pets with their very condensed lifespans, things that we can then translate into human medicine? Because, yes, we both have this dementia that comes along with age. We both have Alzheimer's and the beta amyloid plaques that form in our brains that you really only know about when you do a biopsy, and that's after a pet or a person has passed. Can we make a correlation between the two?
Well, directly, that's where work is still proceeding. Dogs make very good models for early human Alzheimer's, and therefore, if you could find therapeutic agents, if you could find supplements, if you could find biomarkers, then these might translate to humans. And there is work being done in that field, but nothing specific that I know of that we can report other than these similarities between the conditions. Having said that, there's a lot of, if it works in animals, it might work in humans and vice versa, that is being used. So for instance, one of the areas that was looked at that's been talked about in people is keep ongoing use of the brain. In other words, enrichment. Can enrichment keep the brain and education keep the brain healthier for longer? And there is data to show that enrichment and good diet might be helpful. Well, there were studies, and some of these were laboratory studies, where enrichment led to slowing of cognitive decline or in dogs that had enrichment compared to dogs that didn't have enrichment. And I've already mentioned the effects of diet. The reason, like fish oils and antioxidants. So yes, what might work in pets might be something that can be looked at in people. What has worked in people might be something that can be looked at in pets. But clearly there's no direct, something that works in one isn't necessarily going to work in the other. We work, and you mentioned CanCog, where I'm a consultant, where I'm vice president. There is where a lot of the cognitive research was done. And that's because they've developed some neuropsychological tests for animals that can pick up declines in learning and memory just by figuring out, can the animal learn where that food is hidden under one of two objects or one of three objects? Can they remember if you reverse the positions? And using that, that's where they've determined that older dogs start to have a decline in learning and memory as early as 6 to 8 years of age compared to younger dogs. And these laboratory studies are often done in beagles, so it may or may not completely translate to other breeds, to all dogs. And number two, that's where you could try a therapeutic diet or a therapeutic treatment to see if you had a placebo group that didn't have the treatment, one that did have the treatment, whether that learning or memory test could improve. We've got both clinical trials and these laboratory studies that have looked at diets and some products out there.
I love the fact that you're talking about enrichment being so important. So too often you get that older dog and you go, I'm not going to try to teach it any new tricks or do anything. It's happy. It's just laying on the couch. We're just going to let it be. But in reality, it does seem to be very important to stay interactive with that pet, making it maybe use food puzzles so we can find where that food is hiding, or teach it some new behaviors, tricks. And of course, you always have to wonder, you can teach that old dog a new trick, but will it remember? But it also sounds as though if you keep doing it, maybe for ourselves too, it keeps that brain active. And then I love this idea about diets. What's important about the diet? What are the components in that diet that seem to make a difference?
Well, you're right that keeping the brain healthy and active and proving it in studies is really helpful to know. And what ends up happening with some older pets is if they have arthritis or if they have kidney problems or if they have visual problems, sometimes the owners think that the pet doesn't need it as much. And in fact, you just have to find other ways to enrich them. Like you said, food puzzles or shorter walks or taking them up and down ramps and treating their medical problems so that basically you can keep that brain as active as possible within the limits of what the pet can handle. As far as diet is concerned, there have been different elements of diet looked at. One of the first ones was this study for almost 3 years in a laboratory environment with the BD food, the brain diet. And in that diet was antioxidants, was some mitochondrial factors like alpha-lipoic acid and L-carnitine, and fatty acids, fish oils, which might have an anti-inflammatory effect. And that's the one that over a couple of years, they found that the animals on the diet plus the enrichment did best on the learning tasks, did better than dogs that had enrichment alone or diet alone. And having said that, the group that did the poorest are the ones that didn't have any enrichment. And when I say any, of course, they had their normal daily exercise, et cetera, but they didn't have these extra brain tasks that the enriched group had. And the ones that had the regular diet, just a control diet, and the no enrichment did the poorest. More recently, in a clinical study that we did, there was also originally a laboratory study, it was looked at MCT oils. And MCT oils are medium chain triglycerides added to the diet are converting to ketones in the brain. And what ends up happening as the brain gets older, you can't use glucose as a good source of energy, or it starts to drop off at middle age, the ability to utilize glucose. So if you can get ketones in, and the MCT oils do convert to ketones in the brain, you can improve the ability of the mitochondria, the brain cells, to utilize ketones as a form of energy instead of glucose. And in the recent clinical trial we did, and as I said, there was also a laboratory study, the MCT oil supplementation plus the some arginine and some B vitamins and some antioxidants and fish oils improved every category after 90 days of treatment. In fact, 5 of 6 categories in the DSHA were improved after 30 days of treatment. And interestingly enough, that diet's just been released. It's called NeuroCare. It was also used in an epilepsy study. And in an epilepsy study, that it was, in together with the drugs for epilepsy, was able to reduce seizure frequency. So with that in mind, this NeuroCare diet is for a cognitive dysfunction and adjunctive for cognitive dysfunction and for epilepsy. So diet alone, and there are other supplements that have phosphatidylserine in them, that have other antioxidants in them, that you can also get as supplements in case you can't switch the diet but want to use a supplement.
So, I mean, this just sounds amazing. That neuro diet, who makes the neuro diet?
The NeuroCare is a Purina food. The BD is a Hill's food, so Hill's BD diet. And NeuroCare is the Purina veterinary diet. The supplement that I talked about that has phosphatidylserine and some antioxidants, there's also a clinical trial and a laboratory trial with that one. That's called Senolife. That's from SIVA. There's a supplement that is actually a protein that's derived from jellyfish. It's called apoecorin. That serves as a calcium buffer. That one's also been tested in a laboratory study, and it's called Nutrix. And then finally, there's one that actually you and I have used for probably many years for dogs with liver problems and other uses. It's called SAMI, or S-adenosylthionine. And that supplement also was shown to improve cognitive function. So the brand name was NovaFit, but that brand I don't think is out there anymore, just to give credit to who did the research. But you can get other forms of SAMI. So we've got 4 or 5 supplements, plus many more that don't have a lot of good science behind them. They might work, but they haven't been studied in the same way. But those all can be helpful, along with the one drug that's out there, Selegiline. So there's a lot of options for diet, for supplements, even for drug therapy that might slow the decline or improve the clinical signs.
One of the things I know when I watch TV or read the newspaper and see about this supplement may help with X condition, it's like, oh, I'm going to run out and I'm going to get, and if it says maybe 100 international units of vitamin E is good for this, it's like, oh, if 100's good, I'm going to take 400 because that's going to be 4 times even better. With supplements, how do you know how much to take? Is there going to be contraindications to other medical conditions that you have? What's a good product to take? How do you get that information?
Well, that's the problem with anecdote. There's information out there on maybe studies that have been done on certain amounts of vitamin E or fish oils or certain drugs, medications, or certain supplements in the diet. And they were used in the right combination or the optimum levels to achieve the results that they achieved. Well, more isn't necessarily better. Used alone, they might not be as good. And I think most of the research has looked at the fact that you often need a blend of the right nutrients working together or the right supplements working together. I'm talking about the supplements and nutrition right now, at the right levels to get the optimum effect. So there really isn't much good science other than to use the branded products that have been tested already in the field, or at the very least to look at the actual ingredient levels in those products that have been shown to work and find equivalent products that have the same level of ingredients, the same combination of L-carnitine, alpha-lipoic acid, vitamin E, vitamin C, fatty acids, or you can buy the food that was already tested and used in that field. So I think the answer is this is the one place where I don't necessarily want to mention name brands because it doesn't necessarily mean one brand is better than the other. But in this case, if only the brands that I'm talking about have been assessed, those are the only ones that for now do we know have some level of improvement. So look at the levels of ingredients, that's critical, and the combinations of ingredients, especially if you're not using one of the branded products.
So you'd mentioned the BD and the NeuroCare diet. Are these both for cats and dogs, only dogs? Who are they for?
Well, everything I mentioned other than the SAMI product has been only assessed for use in dogs. And of course, the diets are dog diets right now. Mm-hmm. So there's less available for cats.
Why? That's not fair.
because they haven't been assessed, maybe because, I mean, there are laboratory models for cats now, too, which would allow you to assess these in a controlled environment. But I think the research is just farther behind. Cats are a little bit more sensitive, perhaps, to finding just the right combinations, the right medications, so maybe a little longer before the cat research lags behind. Maybe the finances aren't there to put into cats before dogs. I don't know all of the reasons, but I do know there have been nutrient blends with also arginine and fatty acids and B vitamins, antioxidants that have been used in cats in laboratory work. I've seen the articles published on those. So we know that those might help cats. There's just not necessarily a commercial diet. There are some senior diets that some of the therapeutic diet companies make that have some ingredients like phosphatidylserine. The Senolife supplement that I mentioned does have a cat label on it, although there haven't been any cat trials that I've seen published. The one product that was looked at in cats was the SAMI product that I mentioned in a laboratory model. They found improvement in learning tasks. But a moral of the story of the cat study was it worked best on the early signs of cognitive dysfunction. When the animals had worse or more advanced learning and memory problems, it was less likely the products were going to work. So one of the take-home messages here, which we've been talking about all along, is diagnose early. The earliest signs, maybe you see them, but your veterinarian wouldn't necessarily know about them, or you don't think they're that severe, let your veterinarian know, because if we are going to treat, the earlier, the better.
Dr. Landsberg, this is awesome. I know I'm trying to have to remember everything that you told me, and I'm sure that our clients are going to be interested in asking those questions to their veterinarian. And always going back to this particular presentation that you have, our discussion, and going, oh yeah, what did he say? What do I have to look for? We know that treating early is going to be so much better for our pet's long-term health. And yes, remember that it's important to look, ask, question. If your veterinarian doesn't ask, you need to bring it up. So this is Dr. Bernadine Cruz. I've been talking to Dr. Gary Landsberg, board-certified veterinary behaviorist. He operates Behavior Referral Practice, North Toronto Veterinary Behavior Specialty Clinic in Canada, and is a vice president of veterinary affairs at Canncog Technology. Dr. Landsberg, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Please tune in again next week. We'll have more information on how to make you the best possible pet owner. Take care.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life because they're a member of the family. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.